welcome to another episode of the Marvel Cinematic Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Ryan, how's it going?
I'm alive. I'm living.
This is good news. This is very good news.
It's raining.
It's been raining. It's been raining here too, so we're in the same boat there. Not in the same boat, but you know, different boats, but same scenario.
We're all in the same boat of humanity. Yeah. That we're drowned.
Yeah. Except some countries are giving their people lifeboats. The other ones are telling, "Oh, you're on your own."
I really wish I was in New Zealand right now.
Yeah. They got a good system there. You know, I say when I open the show, I say as always, I'm your host and you're my co-host. But this is only the second episode, so why would something have changed between?
They've heard our lovely voices paired together before, so
yeah. So I guess it still works. Given that this is the Marvel Cinematic Podcast, and given that we said we were going to start our show off with the Marvel Cinematic Universe in order, if you listened to the last episode, then you'll know that episode one was Iron Man. So tonight's episode will be 2008's The Incredible Hulk. Before we get to that film, there is one small piece of news. And Ryan is going to tell us what that is, and then we'll discuss it for a bit.
Well, as everyone is aware of, almost every single, just every movie has been pushed back, delayed indefinitely, pushed back to later this year or next year. 2021 is looking like it's going to be very packed, and then we're going to all lose a lot of money.
Yeah.
But on the Marvel side of things, it's like there's a part of me that's like, why do we even bother talking about it? Because it's not going to stick, most likely. But Disney has rescheduled New Mutants. It was originally supposed to come out at the beginning of April. And before this pandemic, it actually looked like it was going to happen this time. This poor film cannot catch a break.
Yeah.
But as of right now, I'm imagine me doing this with air quotes as I speak. Yeah. It is scheduled for August 28th of this year. We will see.
Okay, well, here's what I'll say. If it comes out at that time, I think Disney is going to use it to test the waters in terms of what releasing a movie in theaters, you know, relatively soonish, in the midst of what's going on, with all the social distancing rules that would probably apply to being able to open the theater, what a film releasing in that scenario looks like in terms of box office. And I think they'll probably give it a 2-week theatrical window, and then it'll probably end up on streaming, you know, after that window. So I think it'll be a very limited release. It'll be like a test subject, if you will, right? And so my theory is, if it does come out on the date, it'll get a 2-week in theater release, and then be available to rent and or buy on streaming platforms. That's just my feeling, because I don't think people are going to be running out real quick.
No.
That soon. I mean, I know, you know, that's 3 months from now, or just over 3 months. But, you know, and you hope that you know, cases around the world, not just in North America, but around the world, continue to decrease and things start to get better. But, you know, this has shown that it's not something you can pinpoint with any degree of accuracy, right? So, like I said, I think they'll just let it, you know, provided the theaters are open again, they'll let it come out and they'll do like a 2-week test case. And then,
I mean, like what you and I were talking before we started recording was that, you know, states, at least here in the United States, are starting to slowly reopen and all that stuff. But like Los Angeles County by themselves have extended stay-at-home orders until the end of July.
Now, so really, the only thing outside is the Hollywood sign. Basically.
But the way that I've seen this formatted on Twitter was, I mean, if you're closing down just Los Angeles, think about just Los Angeles County, Los Angeles, you know, one of the biggest movie markets, not just production-wise, but just markets for watching movies.
Yeah.
Until the end of July. I mean, can you really imagine that even if at half capacity, because a lot of theaters are only going to do like 30, 40, 50% capacity right. for a while when they open. Like, gotta love Chris Nolan. You know, he's committed for Tenet to come out in mid-July. If Los Angeles isn't going to be open by then, I do not see that movie keeping a July release.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think he's being extremely hopeful. But I think when push comes to shove, I think Warner Brothers will eventually say it's just not happening.
Which is why I'm also kind of hoping, even though I'm sick of waiting, we could have had this movie back in November, but they won't, whatever. Wonder Woman, you know, just push it back because it's, there's not, you know, I want that to do well, and it's not going to do well if it opens up in August. It's just not.
Look, I want to see that more, you know, look, I'm excited for, I want to see New Mutants.
Uh-huh.
But I I really want to see Wonder Woman. But if it comes out on that date, I can't say that I'm going to go for sure.
Right. If I was to make a decision right now, I probably would say no.
Yeah.
Things are changing rather quickly, daily, weekly, monthly. So maybe by July, there might be some kind of freaking miracle. I don't know. I'm not willing to bet on it. This would have to be something that I would like have to wait until like a month out for me to decide if it's going to
be. Yeah, and even then, maybe a week or two before, because then you'll really get a sense of, like, if it's still coming out, then, you know, a week or two before, you'll get a sense of roughly how things are going, right?
Yeah.
But like, for me, I sort of have this internal, you know, mental idea where, as much as there are movies that I want to see that are going to come out before this particular movie, but as far as I'm concerned, the only movie that I literally must be at a theater for comes out October 1st, 2021. Between now and then,
we better have an effing vaccine by then.
I swear to God, like, listen, I'll go pull Barry Allen through the TV and say, listen, Mr. Forensic Scientist, I don't know if you can help here, but fix this. Or Ian Barth, I'll pull anybody, any fictional scientist. I'll go back in time and get, what's his name, Einstein, all the smart people. And just, you know, and they'll come back and be like, really, this guy's president? And then they'll be like, I was better off dead. So that's the only movie that I sort of, that's a must. Like, I have to, I mean. To me, I've been going since 1989. I've never missed one, so that's the one that I have to be. But you know, I'd like to be at the other ones, but I'd also like to do it safely.
All I can say right now is like I said a moment ago, if someone was like, you have to choose right now, would you risk it in August, not knowing the forecast, or
it's a no right now for me. I sound like Simon Cowell. It's a no for me.
And it breaks my heart because New Mutants.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see Tenet, but sorry, Chris, I'm not gonna risk it if you're gonna keep a July date.
So do I. But apparently Pattinson didn't work out for that, so I'm waiting.
I'm into that right now. Just people online are stupid.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman, I mean, I definitely need to see it. But, and with this being a Marvel podcast, New Mutants, I've wanted to see this movie for the last 3 freaking years.
Yeah, oh no, it's fantastic, and it looks fantastic, and I want to see the end of the Fox X-Men era, but...
And, it looked like it was actually going to happen. We were so close. So damn close.
And then we weren't, and that's how things go.
Would I love to give this film like the true last Fox X-Men movie? Would I love to give that entire era of comic books and superhero movies a proper send-off sitting in a theater watching it? Yes, absolutely.
Of course.
But
common sense and safety has to be...
I would not be... It's getting to the point where I would not be opposed to like what Universal did back at the start, where Invisible Man, I did not see that in theaters, but I ended up paying the $20 for the rental on Amazon. I would be willing to do that.
Oh, I'll do that, no problem.
I would be willing to put up money for like a one-time viewing rental or something.
Yeah.
Well, so, but
yeah, I'll pay $20 for to rent.
I appreciate Disney being optimistic that they can in August. We'll see.
I don't even think the mouse has that much power.
I wish he did.
Yeah, but even there's even limits to his ability. But no, I'd pay the $20 rental fee for New Mutants.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to tell Warner Bros. What I pay for Wonder Woman, because then they're going to charge me that. So I'm going to just keep that to myself.
All I have to say about Wonder Woman is that if it does get pushed back to like October, November, I will go see it in theaters. I will happily go see it in theaters. I will also be the one to go online and be like, you've had this movie finished for over a year. We could have seen this a year ago.
You know what, Warner Bros., just drop it in my inbox. I won't tell anybody. Come on, Patty. We're friends. You know me. Well, actually, you have no idea who I am. But if you wanna throw me a bone, we're good. We'll keep you posted and on how New Mutants is going, or how the release looks as we get closer and as the situation unfolds. Mm-hmm. But that's really it, folks, in terms of news. Because, like I said, we're all at home.
Widow doesn't come out. We should have seen that already.
Yeah. But well, that's coming out what? November
of this year. So
yeah. So I'll watch that.
Seems more. That seems more likely to keep its.
Oh date. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So it's just think of it as something to look forward to. That's all. But until we have more news, next time we will now press on with our main attraction, which is our thoughts and review of the 2008 film, The Incredible Hulk, which was the second film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It was directed by Louis Leterrier, and it starred Edward Norton as Bruce Banner, a.k.a. The Incredible Hulk. It had Liv Tyler as Betty Ross. I almost said Betty Brant, but that was the wrong Betty. It had Tim Roth as Emil Blonsky, right? Yep. A.k.a. The Abomination. And then it had... who was the guy that played... I can't remember his name.
William Hurt as General...
Yeah, that's General Ross. Thunderbolt Ross, not Pete Ross, because he wasn't a general, and he wasn't in the Marvel Universe. The guy who played the person that would have become the leader if we ever got a sequel. Perhaps I should have.
Look,
Blake, is it? IMDb, Ryan. You can to the IMDb instead of to the Batmobile. To the IMDb. Oh boy.
You're so professional. I love how professional we are.
Hey, listen, We're in a chaotic time, folks. Professionalism is out the window.
Tim Blake
I knew it was Blake something or other. Tim Blake now, so there it is. I got one of his names right. It's not my fault he's got three first names. He is also a key player in the film. And the internet's professional crybaby, John Campia, has a cameo in this movie.
Really?
Yeah. He's one of the soldiers at the university.
Stop it. Really?
I swear, yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised he wasn't, you know, bitching and moaning about the Hulk wasn't big enough. You know, it didn't work out enough. But that's neither here nor there.
I actually have this scene. Because every single time that we review a movie on this podcast, on the DC, whatever, I always
Ryan cheats and watches it as we're doing it.
I almost treat this as like half commentary.
Yeah.
I'm actually at the university scene.
Okay.
I'm going to try and keep up for a whiny little internet man, baby.
Yeah. But so that's the main cast. So I'll start us off. I really like this film. I think it is one of the more underrated Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. And I'm just going to say right now, and piss off three quarters of the internet, but I prefer Edward Norton as Bruce Banner in the Hulk over Mark Ruffalo. Not to say Mark Ruffalo is not good. I just personally prefer Edward Norton.
For you, is it how they portray the character, or is it the actor, or is it the material?
No, it's the portrayal. It's the portrayal, because I really like Mark Ruffalo in the first Avengers, the second Avengers, and then Ragnarok happens, and he's a comedy act. You know,
I think it got too comedic with Ragnarok. Yeah.
Right. And it's specifically for the Hulk, because to me, what I like about the Hulk and what I love about this movie, this is part of it, but I love that it's got two sort of classic, you know, universal monster characters at play here, in the sense that it's part a Frankenstein kind of movie, and it's part Jekyll and Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
I've always loved that aspect and that tie that the Incredible Hulk has to those characters, and you know it's fitting that the film rights to the character are somewhat still tied to Universal, right? So
yep.
I mean, it all ties in really you know into that motif. So I just prefer the Hulk as more in that vein. So it's not Mark Ruffalo's fault at all. But what I really liked about this movie, and I think this is a good idea for when we get around to Superman, is the way it starts off and how the origin is told through the opening montage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I think it's one of the geniuses of this movie that not only do they, you know, kind of give us a modernized version of the 70s TV show Origin Hulk, but that you get it done in like quick little flashbacks. Like this is how you said it perfectly for Superman, for you know, whenever they end up rebooting new actor or what, however that happens, you know, I can see this being done for Superman. I can see it being done almost like that, the formula of the flashbacks during opening credits or at the beginning. I can almost see that for Spider-Man, Batman.
Yeah, anybody that we've seen the origin three or more times.
Yeah, that way you can have your origin. You can have the director tell their origin, but you get it done in like 3 minutes.
Yeah. Agreed. And so I really like that aspect of it, but I love, like you mentioned the 70s TV show inspirations. It wasn't just in the origin. I mean, the whole film was littered with you know, inspiration from that show. And I, obviously, I watched that, you know, I saw that later, obviously, because I was born in 83. So, but I, my relationship with that show was, I loved it. But at the same time, when Lou Ferrigno came on screen as the Hulk, me as a little young tyke, was scared shitless of the Hulk back in the day. I used to hide behind the sofa and, you know, peek as he was doing his thing. So, but I loved the aspect of the show where he's this, you know, traveling wanderer who is trying to achieve, you know, the aspect of finding a cure for his the monster inside of him, but also along the way, you know, helping those in need. And that's what this version of the Hulk does. And to the point where they even play notes of the theme from the show in certain scenes. And I love that. That to me was great.
And there's a scene where Bruce is watching a show on television, and it's a Bill Bixby.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and you know, of course, they even do the Stan Lee cameo where he drinks that whatever that soda is, but it's been contaminated with Banner's blood because they had an accident at the packaging plant and he got cut and the blood drips into one of the bottles, and you know, poor Stan Lee drank that and had a Hulk attack of some sort. Yeah, I mean, we never know what happened, but there was an incident and it's kind of hinted at, right? So but yeah, that was an interesting cameo for Stan. I still think he probably likes his Deadpool cameo the most, but that's just me speculating for obvious reasons. But no, what did you like? You know, since I talked about liking the Edward Norton version, and you know how I love the fact that it connected, you know, to the old show in terms of the origin aspects, but also, you know, with the cues of the soundtrack in certain places, and also the fact that, you know, Edward Norton in his appearance kind of reminded me a lot of Bill Bixby in this movie. So what are your thoughts on that? How do you feel about it?
I feel like I say this way too often about way too many. Of two minds, where I'm a frozen Two-Face from Batman Forever.
Yeah, you're two minds. It's a new villain. debuting in Batman 105. Somebody tell James Tynion.
Where, if I had to pick between Norton and Ruffalo, I would probably go with Ruffalo, just because we've had a lot more exposure to him, and we've seen his version of Banner and Hulk grow. And clearly, I mean, I think Ruffalo has, you may not like the direction of how his version has gone, but you can't deny that he's got passion for it, for the character.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it.
Yet at the same time, while I might like where Hulk is currently in the MCU, where we went from Ragnarok, where it was comedic, to smart Hulk that I won't deny was a little lackluster in Endgame. I can understand why people do not like, you know, from Ragnarok onward. I think you said it best. It's like the first two Avengers movies are probably the best of the Ruffalo Hulk appearances.
Yeah, to me it reminds me, like, I could buy that it's the same guy. Right? Whereas in Ragnarok and beyond, it's like trying to tell me that It's the same. It's the same analogy of telling me that George Clooney is Michael Keaton's Batman, and it's like no. Sorry. Yeah,
any chance you get for a George Clooney Batman?
I can't. I just can't.
I know. But for Norton himself, again, you know, just one movie, but you can tell that the guy, you know, you hear all the stories of behind the scenes that he got a little bit more hands-on with the story. And maybe there's a little bit of ego involved in that, but you don't take that kind of control over something if you don't care.
Right. Yeah,
off as egotistical, that's like, you know, but you obviously have to care enough. And I really do respect the more serious and I respect and love the more serious aspect of this movie. And going back, you know, to bring up Ruffalo's Hulk one last time for right now, the only times that I ever felt like his version of Banner was tormented and tortured between Bruce and Hulk is the first two Avengers movies.
Yeah.
Where I feel like maybe if Norton had continued on into Avengers, Age of Ultron, and so on, he would have kept playing up the tortured more. Even if we maybe would have gone to how things are now, where there's equilibrium between Banner and Hulk,
right?
He still would have been.
He still would have been more serious. Even in the smart guy routine, yeah.
I really. Looking back on it now, after hearing all the, you know, complaints about Ragnarok, Infinity War, Endgame, it's like, okay, I may like Ruffalo just by a slim margin more, but I can see where everyone's coming from that, you know, haven't been too keen on MCU Hulk.
And hey, look, I really like Ruffalo as an actor and as a performer because, look, he's of Italian background. I got to support my paisa, you know what I mean? So it's not like I'm hating on the guy. It's just, he was in a movie. Look, I'm going to admit something here that I would normally not admit on anywhere. But there was a romantic comedy that he was in, 13 Going on 30 with Jennifer Garner. Yes, I watched it with Jennifer Garner.
That was my first introduction to Ruffalo.
Yeah, mine too, because I'm like, who is this guy? But realistically, I watched it for Jennifer Garner because she's on the list. But, you know, with that out of the way, and that's not the last time I mentioned that list tonight. But anyway, I enjoy. He's got comedy. Like he's great. He's a good actor. It's just, and he proved that he can do that serious, somewhat tortured Banner. It's just they don't want him to do that at this point. So again, not his fault.
Yeah, it's more of the material he's given.
Right, exactly. And I guess you could say that about Clooney too, but let's not go there. Let's not give him a pass. But you know what? I give him credit. He apologized. So I kind of, I forgive him a smidge. But you know what I really liked about this movie, especially in the origin aspect, is how they tied it in with the super soldier serum. And you know how Banner thought, like how he was basically General Ross's pawn the whole time, because Banner thought he was working on a cure for himself. Meanwhile, he's working on, you know, re-engaging the super soldier serum. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was a fascinating way to tie the Hulk in with the what would become the wider and broader Avengers universe. Well, but it's
a little bit more subtle than what the alternate opening to the movie was, where, for God's sake, Captain America's shield is seen frozen in the Arctic. It's a little bit more subtle than that.
It's like, we're not even going to wait till the end credits. Just right now, just boom. But no, that plot point about, you know, tying the serum to Captain mm-hmm. America, the Super Soldier Serum, reminded me a lot. I think it's taking its cues from the Ultimates. Uh-huh. line in Universe, because if I remember correctly, it's the same conceit in that as well. But I really like that. I really do like that. And it proves what kind of a prick, you know, General Ross is, because he doesn't care. He's just, his end game is to, and no pun intended, is I got to create, you know, super soldiers for the army. And he's even using, you know, Blonsky and the other soldiers in the field, because he's not telling them, he's telling them, hey, we got to apprehend Banner. But he's neglecting at first to tell them, by the way, if you get this guy mad, he's got this raging green monster that comes out that will probably tear you to shreds. Like, he's totally neglecting that aspect of it. So he's a bastard, if I can say that plainly. You know, and again, I think that aspect of him is furthered in his relationship with his daughter, because, you know, even the James Marsden stand-in in this movie, which is Betty Ross's boyfriend / fiance, whatever he is,
Doc Sampson.
Yeah, who's also a comics character, but I mean, the actor was portrayed so meaningless in this movie, like the character. Sorry, but you know, even he says, you know, I'm starting to wonder if you even care. Like, do you even care about her safety? And he's like, oh yeah. And he's like, you're lying. You know, he goes, I can tell you're lying. So, like, that his daughter is even a means to an end to capture, essentially, the Incredible Hulk, shows you what kind of a A-level, you know, piece of crap this guy is, right? So, having said that, the actor did a fantastic job as Ross. I love him in the part.
Mm-hmm.
He's great, and that's, you know what, that's saying something, because I also liked the Eric Bana General Ross as well, the guy who played it in that.
Sam Elliott, which
he was good.
If I had to, I like what William Hurt has done in this movie and also in his subsequent MCU appearances. And actually, I look forward to, because we know that he's going to be in Black Widow to some degree. And, you know, this is a character that was kind of strictly Hulk, you know, quote unquote, universe centric.
Right.
But it's cool to see him now interacting with the Avengers. And again, going to be interesting to see how they have him in Black Widow.
Right.
But if I personally had to choose, I would probably go with Sam Elliott.
Just, you know what it is? Yeah. No, go ahead. Finish.
I like William Hurt as an actor. I've always respected him. There are times where I feel like he comes out a little flat. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, personally, the Sam Elliott from the 2003 Hulk film, his version of Ross, was a little bit more of the outright villain.
Yeah.
So...
that's fair. That's a fair point.
I'm not trying to be that much of a D-I-C-K.
Yeah, but, of course.
Yeah.
For the kids, you better be in bed by now, because you just spelled it out. No, but you know what I like about Sam Elliott? What gives him the edge? That mustache is quite the wonder. I got to tell you that he has in that movie. Mm-hmm. That's one hell of a mustache. In fact, I'd venture to put a money on it that if they had to CGI remove that mustache, it would cost more than Henry Cavill's. Because that would seem like a lot of work. You know, there should be a contest. Have them both grow mustaches and see who's cost more to digitally remove. I'd watch that. It'd be like a game show, a competition. And the winner gets money, and the money goes to charity. I'd go for that. I'd watch that. And Warner Brothers is footing the bill either way, because who cares? They like wasting money. Anyway, I have no residual effects of that instance. But I really like the super soldier aspect and how it ties in, how the you know, Banner's issue ties into Captain America and the larger cinematic universe. I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. And they did it in a way, at least with that version, not the version that we didn't see. But in this version, they do it in a way where they're not banging you over the head and winking at you and saying, hey, guess what? You know what I mean? It just felt like a natural thing, like it felt like it made sense. I don't know if you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, Liv Tyler. First of all, I like Liv Tyler. Good actress, definitely on the list. But did it seem to you that it was just too, like the minute she sees Banner, like that Doc Samson, whatever his name is, like even Richard White is laughing at him. And, you know, because at least Lois pretended that, yeah, I'll stay with you. Right? Like Betty Ross just ran and says, "Who?" It's like, it's like that meme, you know, where the guy's looking forward at the girl. It's just, but reverse it with the girl instead of, you know, put the guys in the girl's position, and it's the same thing. Like she just blows him off, and off she goes with Banner. It's like, really? Like, what is this guy? Set dressing? What is he just there? You know? And I'm like, you know, for a doctor, for a scientist, you're kind of, that's kind of shallow. That's kind of cruel. I get it. It's kind of, you know, plus, you know, she has a thing for guys that in some ways are named Bruce because, you know, she was with Ben Affleck in Armageddon, and he went on to play Bruce Wayne, and now she's with Bruce Banner. But I don't know, maybe that's the thing. But yeah, I just found that it was too. It was all too easy. Like they reunited, and it, you know, not to break out of the song, but reunited, and it feels so good. But you know, I like the fact that she was very supportive of him, mm-hmm. and she was willing to put her life on the line.
Yeah, despite, you know, during the opening, you know, flashbacks and or origin story, you know, he never directly hurts her as Hulk, but
yeah,
which he causes during his first outbreak injures her, right. And yet the fact that she's still like committed to him, that's love.
Yeah, you know, that's very. I just felt bad for that poor SOB. It's like you should have like, buddy.
Your criticism about this reminds me of is the reason why my mom does not like. I mean, you can have a whole bunch of reasons, but the reason why personally my mom does not like Kirsten Dunst's Mary Jane.
Oh yeah.
She left her fiance at the altar to run back to Peter.
Give your mom a high five for me next time you're there. She's damn right. It's terrible.
I know you, Mary Jane and Peter to end up together, but poor Jameson Jr.
Yeah, poor SOB. But then you know what? But you know, the only reason I'm okay with that is because that cheap SOB J. Jonah Jameson has to foot the bill for that.
And he gets to go off and be Man Wolf later, so it's good.
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah. We never see that, but it's all good.
My headcanon, it happens at some point.
Exactly. We make up our own stories. But no, so like on the one hand, I love her devotion and faithfulness to him.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, man, that's a terrible thing to just, the way it was presented was just so.
Yeah. It makes me wonder if there was a lot more cut with Samson being involved. And
or are we going to do a release the Lateri cut? Is that what we're doing? Is that a hashtag? Are we going to do that? Because I'm down.
I'm down. I mean, for goodness sakes, we're trying to do release the butthole cut of Cat. So why
not? Yeah, well, why not? We got nothing else to do. We just hashtag a bunch of different shit and see what sticks. But so I... Having said all that, and you know how there's that push and pull between her the way she's presented, I'm kind of upset that we haven't seen her again.
Yeah.
Like, she's an absolute afterthought after this. Like, she's never mentioned. Have they mentioned her again? I mean, he's already moved on to Scarlett Johansson. Like, he's having that whole, the whole sexual innuendo thing where the sun's getting real low. And, you know, listen, if, again, I've said it before, and I'll probably say it again during the Avengers reviews. If Scarlett Johansson's rubbing my hand, I got news for you. Nothing getting low around here. I'll tell you that much. but I digress. He's already moved on to Black Widow. So
this shows, while I like the relationship between Bruce and Natasha in the Avengers movies, we have, you know, Daddy General Ross back. Where's, you know, even if it was just a where's the character of Betty? What happened?
I mean, they brought back Natalie Portman, for Christ's sakes.
Uh-huh. It is something that I find, I agree with you. It's very curious and interesting, and I would love to know the reason. Like, is there a story reason? Was Liv Tyler kind of like with Terrence Howard and Edward Norton, you know, a little too demanding for reprisal of the roles? Or was it as simple as, we have so many other characters to juggle around with, we can't fit in?
Or maybe that's something to do with the Universal thing. If they can use the Hulk, but they can't use...
Which, that would be weird. To me, it would be very curious to see if any of these plot threads, like Abomination, the leader, you know, Betty.
They got to do some of that stuff in She-Hulk.
That's exactly what I was going to get with, to see.
Bring Betty back in She-Hulk. I'd do that.
Yeah. I mean, there's hope. There's talks of trying to get Ruffalo involved, and I kind of want that. Yeah. But, you know, there are... Incredible Hulk is the one MCU movie where I'm still waiting on
waiting on a sequel? Because I got news for you.
Not necessarily, you know, a sequel, but it's just like...
I feel bad for you. Every time you wait for a sequel, it never happens.
I'm waiting on my Man of Steel sequel. I'm waiting on a proper Transformers 6. I'm just going to be waiting a long time.
Yes. You think self-isolation is rough?
Oh, God.
Keep waiting for those sequels. But, so I hope that you, like I said, I think bringing back Betty.
Maybe it's not even just bring her back. Just let us know.
Mention her. Is she alive? Is she dead? Is she...
Uh-huh.
Has she turned into another Hulk? Like, what's going on?
No, that would be interesting. If we have Ross back, we can have Red Hulk and we can have Red She-Hulk back.
Well, they're doing it in the comics. I don't know if you know that.
I like Liv Tyler.
So do I. Yeah.
I think across all of our podcasts, I have made it clear that I am okay with in continuity, in universe recastings.
Oh, of course, yeah.
His character is more important than just one actor.
I agree. Yeah.
So, however, it's just give me something. we don't know what's happened with Betty since 2008.
She's just lit up. I don't think
she's even referenced it. What?
Maybe she reunited with Samson. Maybe he took her back. Here's in my head. Samson went to a bar and he found Richard White there, and they had a conversation. And he said, and James Marsden's like, "Look, buddy, I got screwed. Two different women, two different other superheroes. Just take her back. Accept that you're the sloppy seconds, and roll with it." And that's probably what happened, or at least in my head canon. That's, you know, the how it should have ended videos. That's what I would have done. What do you think? I want to ask your opinion of Blonsky. And do you at the start of the film, before he gets, you know, embarrassed by Banner and then signs up for to be injected with the serum and becomes the Abomination. Do you find him an admirable character? Like, you know, dedicated to his country? Or do you think it's just once he gets a glimpse of the Hulk, it all becomes, I want some of that power?
I want to say a little bit of both.
Okay.
Definitely the, you know, I want that. You know, when the first time he ever sees the Hulk down in the processing factory.
Yeah.
That. And, you know, Roth does such a, this is, again, another character that I want to see come back somehow.
Yeah.
Because you can, I think it's pretty clear that he just was having a good time, you know, playing.
Yeah.
Even a simple, you know, quote-unquote super soldier, Emil Blonsky. He was having a great time with this movie.
Oh yeah. And he plays a really good villain. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Before any transformation happens.
Uh-huh.
You don't like this guy, and that's because he's doing his job properly.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I like the villains to, you know, the whole the villain thinks they're the hero of their story. Sometimes that's okay and I like that. But character like this, just let them be a prick.
Yeah, okay? Exactly. Yeah, and the moment he tranks that dog, you know, this guy is really the lowest of the low.
Which makes it, you know, really, you know, he's going to be coming back, but when he's, punched or kicked into the tree.
Yeah.
And he's like all up. It just makes you feel so good inside. Just, oh.
Well, yes. Oh, yeah. It's a real feel good moment for the audience. And, but the other thing I like, I like the whole aspect of, you know, throughout the movie, it's about, you know, Banner's constant search for the cure, and that he had another confidant that, you know, he eventually meets up with. But throughout the whole film, via their secret email exchanges or their secret online exchanges, and then when they finally meet up, you know, that camaraderie with somebody else, because if, now this is before. Obviously, before seeing the Avengers and his you know friendship with Tony, but before that, in the other Hulk movie, he really, aside from Betty, was a man on his own. So even though they kept that loner mentality to kind of tie it in with the 70s aesthetic, it was nice to have, you know, see him. Corresponding and working with a fellow scientist. I kind of like that.
If we had the outright obnoxious villain in Blonsky, I mean, Sam Cerns, he's not a villain in this, but at least his character could have gone through the arc of the guy who meant well,
mm-hmm.
but then through his own metamorphosis. And, you know, change with the accumulation of all that knowledge. You could see him become the stone cold hearted leader that we know from the comics.
Yeah. And again, you're right in saying that he wasn't an outright villain because he didn't know that, or
mm-hmm.
he had no comprehension that, hey, you know, we're testing this on other people.
Yeah,
he thought it was for a noble endeavor.
Yeah, he thought that we could use, you know, the Hulk blood to cure diseases. You know, it's like you said, it's a noble, you know, it's his heart was in the right place.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I don't outright, you know, think of him at this stage as a villain. And then when you see all the crap goes down in the lab and you see the movement of his head after, you know, after the Barry Allen science lab goes wrong kind of theme happens, and you see the head start to transform. I was so looking forward to a sequel so that we could get the leader, but.
Again, I think that's either going to be She-Hulk or maybe if we ever get a Thunderbolts movie.
I don't care where, just do it. That's my theory, or my want, not my theory.
Now, a question I wanted to ask you, because you're more probably going into this movie more of a Hulk fan than I was. Going back to Abomination, did you have a problem with Abomination in this movie?
No.
Looking like the scaly reptilian from the comics?
No, I had zero a problem with it.
Okay.
I thought he looked... He fit the overall look and design of the movie, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Now, the reason why I wanted to ask that was...
Were there a lot of complaints about that?
Oh, yes. There are a lot of people that do not like how Abomination looks in this movie because he's not the scaly with, like, the elf ears or whatnot. I kind of take it in the same vein as people who don't like the Mandarin twist of Iron Man. Was that because Now, of course, me being a little bit of a noob that I am, you know, this was my first introduction to a character like the Abomination. So I liked it. I thought it was cool. I can understand why people didn't like it, but I thought people took their criticism too far.
Yeah.
Just like with the whole Mandarin thing, you know, that did not bother me for Iron Man 3. And plus, we're getting the real Mandarin in Shang-Chi, so everyone please calm down.
I've been waiting for the real Mandarin since Iron Man 1, apparently.
And it's taken us close to 15 years.
Well, when is Shang-Chi coming out? 2040? When the hell is that movie? I don't even know.
It was supposed to be next year.
So what is it now, 2021?
I think it's still scheduled for next year, just probably, I think, like summer or fall.
Okay, so we've waited 18... That would be 13 years for the real Mandarin. Way to go. good job, boys. In terms of the look, I had no. I mean, look, it, aesthetically with the film, it looked like it fit in, and that's all. You know, that was my concern. And speaking of looks, I think the visuals in this movie are fantastic. Uh-huh. Yeah, like still to this day. I like how. And if you think about it, until the university action,
mm-hmm.
we really don't get a full-on look at the Hulk until then.
Mm-hmm. They treat it like...
A horror movie, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of a horror movie, yeah.
Like that sequence in Brazil where they're in the factory and those, you know, he's running away from those bullies and also the army at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, first of all, with the smoke and them being on the different, you know, the different levels of the factory, how they're going across the, you know, the different rails and stuff, and the smoke coming up from the canisters, that kind of gave me a Batman 89 vibe a little bit. I'm like, mm-hmm. we're at the Marvel equivalent of Ace Chemicals, but it's for a soft, you know. Yeah, soft drink. But whatever. That was just my head kind of. but, you know, the way, like, you never saw, he was always in shadow, and you really saw this green, you know, the dark green, or when the light hit the Hulk skin, or you saw the green eyes. And the way it was done was just, it was so fantastic. I loved it. And then that first big full reveal, when you finally get it at the university,
mm-hmm.
like that's a even though he's a scarier figure, mm-hmm. what a hero moment that was, like, you know, that was a great moment. But like visually, I thought it all looked like, yes, they've improved the CGI from then until now, obviously. I mean mm-hmm. the textures are a little bit more detailed and stuff, but this looked really, really good still.
Very impressive fight scenes, and something that you just don't see MCU Hulk doing a lot nowadays that I love about this movie.
Smashing,
yeah. But more specifically, using weapons, like, you know, breaking up the cars in half and using those as like boxing gloves.
I love that.
And he does that the university fight. He uses it during the fight with Abomination in Harlem.
Yeah.
So that stuff's just like, I want to see more of that.
Which was just downtown Toronto, but I digress.
Using the environment around you.
Yeah. Oh, of course. And it shows that he's not just a mindless brute. There's still intelligence there, you know, as limited as it is when he's in that form. Because there's even one, you know, back in that plant, in the opening or early on in the film, I should say, when everybody's after him, he's like, you hear him kind of soft yell, "Leave me alone," right? So I'm like, and I had forgot about that. I'm like, oh my God, he can form a full, you know, that's a full sentence, and you know, and it's like, oh, very good, you know. It's I prefer that than, hey, let's take a selfie with that man, and make fun of him. But anyway. The part that got me was when he used, I don't know if he had the vehicle parts where he smiled, like when he was using him as a shield, but when he tried to sort of deflect that sonar technology, did he just, I can't remember, did he clap those or did he just clap his hands to deflect the waves? Either way, it was a great moment. Like, I loved it.
The only time that comes to mind of him using, like, the thunderclap move is, like, at the end to put out the fire in the helicopter. I can't recall if he uses it during any of the fights.
Yeah, but I love that moment. That was just great.
Mm-hmm.
Also, before he goes down in the Harlem sequence to fight the leader, I like when he has the army and General Ross drop him from the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Like that whole aspect of, you know, just before he crashes into the ground, he turns into the Hulk. I love that.
Something that they would see, I like Ragnarok, but something that they would later duplicate in Ragnarok as a joke. Where
of course.
He thinks he's going to turn, but then he just falls onto the Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah, because he's got performance anxiety at this point. He needs the Hulk version of Viagra at this point. Maybe it comes with age, who knows. But, you know, like, the action in this, like, the fight sequences in this film. I'll be honest, and I'm going to say it, and again, I may piss off a lot of people, but at this point, how many times have I done that? If we had a drinking game for the amount of people I've pissed off, everybody would be drunk.
I think we'd have alcohol poisoning.
Everybody would, yeah. And it wouldn't be from detergents or anything like that. It'd be from actual alcohol that you're supposed to drink. But I got to be honest. The fight scenes in this have a lot of similarity to the fight scenes in Man of Steel. The destruction is quite on par. I got to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bad. But there's two big differences. Here, I actually really like it because that's more typical of the Hulk. It's more his style, right? Mm-hmm. And again, for me, it all goes back to how it's presented and how it's lit, right? And those sequences were dark, like darkly lit, but it still felt a lot more brighter. And I think, look, I know the MCU movies are supposed to take place, you know, in the world outside our window. But, you know, in that film, at that point, I my suspension of disbelief was already on high. Like, there was no, I mean, as much as you try and tell me that this is supposed to be the world outside our door, that just goes out the window when a guy transforms into a big green rage monster. You know what I mean? So it's different when you're presenting it like that. Like, this felt, and I don't mean this in a negative way, this felt like I was watching a comic book movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It felt comic booky. Again, I love Man of Steel, but the reason why I have more problem with the amount of fighting and destruction in that is because it feels like I'm watching a newsreel of a, like something like a 9/11 situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So again, it's presentation. And I think this did a real good job of, yes, there's a shit ton of destruction, but look at this comic book movie. And it looks and feels like one. And so that's where I think that's why, because a lot of people will say, well, the Hulk can do it. Why do people have a problem when Superman does it? Or when it's in a Superman, not that Superman caused it all, but that it's in a Superman film to that degree. Well, the difference is how it's presented, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I really did like it. And I like the fact that there's one moment where the Abomination digs his bone spurs into the Hulk's chest. And I like the fact that this wasn't a walk in the park for the Hulk. Like, this took a toll on him. Like, he was a powerful figure, but you got the sense that he wasn't impervious to pain. And I like that.
Yeah, we don't see a whole lot in any of these movies things that can make a Hulk lash out in pain.
Yeah.
And actually get hurt and bleed. And that, again, is another reason why I want Abomination to come back.
Yeah.
Because that is an enemy that Hulk can fight on his level.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. And so, of the action sequences, which one is your favorite? Which action set piece is your... So, of the three, let's say, if you had to choose, would it be the soda plant fight? Would it be the university fight? Or would it be the downtown Harlem fight?
I would probably, as much as I'm like, ooh, to, you know, colorful comic book characters fighting each other in the streets of a city. Oh, I like that. I would actually probably would have to pick the university fight, because that's just military versus Hulk, and that's something that you could almost imagine playing out in the 70s TV show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with you there. And again, because it evokes that vibe of the 70s show, because I really love that show, and I hope that at some point we get a chance to review some of it on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I know it's not movies, but they made TV movies out of it, so we'll pretend that it is. Because we could do that, we could bend the rules, it's our show. So screw it. I would agree, that's my favorite sequence as well, so well done on that choice. Any choice is really good, because they're all very well put together and executed. So any choice would be a good choice, but that's my choice as well. One thing I want to know before we sort of, you know, put a bow on it and give a rating is that at the end of the film, when he's in British Columbia, even the Hulk likes it here, and he's doing that meditation, and it's like days without incident. And then his eyes, you know, go green. I think that is really a testament to him gaining control over it, over the Hulk, and controlling when he comes out and when he doesn't. So that when we see it in Avengers, they're building off of that moment. I that's how I foresee it. Would you agree with that assessment, or do you see it a different way?
Of what again exactly?
I'm sorry. So in terms of the ending where he's meditating and it says days without an incident.
I mean, it's clearly leading into, because we never really learn, like, between Incredible Hulk and Avengers. Well, okay, I'm trying to think of like the broad like MCU timeline. Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, and Thor were all supposed to happen within a week of each other. And we don't know exactly how long between that and Avengers, what, a couple months, maybe?
Yeah.
At least, roughly. I think it's showing the beginnings of Bruce trying to learn control.
Right.
And trying to figure out a way not just to not have Hulkouts, but maybe to control them a little bit more. Because they don't really say between, like I was trying to get at, Incredible Hulk and Avengers, if there are any Hulkouts anywhere during Bruce's global travels. And I kind of got the idea that between the glowing green eyes at the end and the helicarrier, I think, yeah, the helicarrier is the first time.
Yeah.
There were no Hulkouts in there in between.
Yeah, same. Okay, so you're in agreement with me that at least that's the starting point of
yeah.
the quote-unquote I'm always angry aspect of it. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I, again, you know, bringing back to the 70s, you know, him saying, you know, you wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Yeah. No, I like how they played with that as well. That was good. And it should be noted that you know, the Incredible Hulk popularized Fitbits before they were actually a thing, you know, big. So I'm like, oh my God, he's got a Fitbit on. I didn't put two and two together until, you know, until the rewatch this morning. But how bad, I mean, when he was with Betty, I'm like, man, that sucks for you. You just can't. You just can't have any enjoyment in life, my friend. It really sucks for you. And I like how she's like, oh, it's okay. I'm okay with it. Really? You're okay with being impaled, but potentially being impaled by a big green? Like, that ain't gonna end well for you. You might want to listen to him on this one. So I'm glad we're in agreement on that. Or we're on the same wavelength on that final scene there. But okay, so in that case, Ryan, unless you have anything else particular to add, what are your final thoughts on this movie?
I agree with you that I think this is one of the more overlooked and underrated of the MCU movies. This was, I would say, like the entirety of Phase 1 was definitely played maybe a little bit more serious than how things have played. I'm okay with, you know, Phase 2 and Phase 3.
Right.
A little bit more on the comedic side, but I do feel like Phase 1 kind of does stand out, and this is one of those movies that exemplify it. It would have been I would love to go to the alternate universe where Norton continued on and as the Hulk and Avengers. And
can you imagine if he was in Civil War, like Edward Norton's Hulk? That would have been.
Imagine Edward Norton's Hulk in freaking Ragnarok.
Oh god. Hella would have got a beating.
I really do like this movie. There's a lot of threads that we've been hammering this all night. There are a lot of threads and characters in this movie, more so than any other MCU film, that I want to see come back because they've been absent since 2008. And you know, that there was so much potential. And I wish that the film rights were, you know, it's complicated. It's not as complicated. Okay. Everything with like 20th Century Fox, like the X-Men and the Fantastic Four, how those film rights worked are less complicated than what is going on with Marvel Studios and Universal.
Yes.
Because I don't even know where to begin on that one. I just hope that with maybe starting with She-Hulk, we can get a, you know, Hulk family and Hulk characters more exposure and time to shine in the MCU.
Agreed.
So, and fun little fact, this is the only MCU movie I never saw in theaters once.
Oh, wow.
This was before I was really super invested into superheroes. Ha. Where it was mostly Spider-Man, Batman, Superman, and the X-Men. And I wasn't even comic books at that point in 2008.
What a difference 12 years makes, huh?
Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know that this was supposed to be connected to Iron Man. I didn't know that until long after my chance to see it. So just a little fun piece of trivia that this movie that I like very much, I didn't even see it until probably shortly after Iron Man 2 came out.
As we're talking, you're well, it's like, simpler times.
Simpler times when we only had to see 2, 3, maybe 4 of these movies a year.
It's funny, all our wallets are getting somewhat replenished, sort of, in this isolation. The minute we're allowed to excessively spend again, it's over.
I thought I was going to be saving money during all this, but then I discovered online shopping.
Yeah, and then it was over.
And then there's next year, where every month is going to have, like, 2 comic book movies.
Yeah, so we're screwed. Yeah, big time.
Out of, like, 10? Are we doing out of 10?
Yeah, I'll just give my quick thoughts, though, and then we'll do the rating. So, my thoughts, like I said, I really, really like this movie a lot. It's one of my favorite Phase 1 movies. I just think, to me, it gave me the tortured Hulk, the Frankenstein meets Jekyll and Hyde Hulk, and that's the one my preference. And I think that it had a good balance of paying homage to what came before in the 70s, but also putting its own fresh and unique spin on it at the same time. And that is a tough line, you know, to walk when you have a character that has a really popular and transcendent version that's come before. And I think this film does that very well. And like I said, this is one of the ones where I can watch many times and not get sick of it, not get tired of it. And the fact that it was filmed here and that I can recognize certain places adds to the fun of it. But I absolutely adore this movie. I think it's fantastic. It's incredible, even. How about that? But yeah, all right, let's rate this thing.
It's incredibly good. It's I want to do that with a Spider-Man movie someday. It is. Yeah. I thought the movie was amazing. It was spectacular. It was sensational. It was web of.
Wait a minute, that last one doesn't make sense.
It was.
Well, I was caught in the web of, you know. You could say that.
It was adjectiveless. It was ultimate.
Yeah. Exactly.
If we're doing out of 10, I would give this one a solid 8. You know, 8 out of 10.
All right, cool. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go 8.5 out of 10. I really like this movie. But so if you missed it or if you haven't watched it since 2008, give it a rewatch, because I think you'll really appreciate it. It was a good second entry that just kept building anticipation for the next, at least for me. It was fun. So with the Incredible Hulk now watched and discussed, our next movie for next month's episode will be, if my list is right, Iron Man 2.
Yep.
So if you are following along, that's your homework for the next month, and join us when we look back on Iron Man 2. But until then, we hope you enjoyed this episode, because Ryan and I enjoy talking about this movie and all these movies and bringing these episodes to you. And if you want to talk more with us about the MCU, Ryan, where can they get a hold of you at?
You can find me on Twitter at The Amazing Rye Guy.
Awesome. And if you want to talk with me, you can get a hold of me at Adam_LeafsFan or on the Facebook, the Multiverse Musings Podcast Network Facebook page, where if you ask for permission to the group, either Ryan, myself, or one of our other contributors our co-host will add you to the group and we can continue the discussion there if you so want to. But until next time, stay safe and remember that the Hulk is forever, from the first Smash to the last. So long, everybody.
Take care, be safe, and if you go out in public, please wear your mask.